Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So grab your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hi, Sam. Welcome to Crypto Nights podcast. We are so excited to have you on our podcast today.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Nice to have you. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Why don't we kick it off by an introduction? Tell us about yourself, Sam, a little bit, and then we'll get into Caudill.
Cool. Yeah, so I'm originally a software engineer, but shortly after graduation, I noticed that coding and sitting behind a computer is not really the thing I want to do for the rest of my life. So I kind of jumped more to the product side of software, so the business side. So I slowly started doing project management, and I worked with a company in the UK for a few years as a product manager in the media sector. Then shortly after, I got attracted to fintech somehow before fintech even became popular. I was one of the business analysts in one of the North America's biggest payment processors called Pivotal Payment. And then shortly after, I joined the peer-to-peer lending industry. So there was a startup in Canada that was kind of doing that in the early days called IU Financial. I was the head of product, employee number 4. And we basically took the company public in 2012. And by the time I left, we had around $500 million in assets under management. So I kind of liked the merging the software side with the business side and focus more on product strategy, innovation, and going to market. And then just being exposed to all of that kind of exposed me to the ideas out there in the market and how to kind of bring startup financing to a more friendlier environment. I've been a fan of blockchain from day one. I mean, I did have my doubts, just like everyone early on in the industry. But as I read more about it, I kind of started getting used to the idea and how we can apply it in the financial sector, whether it's lending or operational. And then with Ethereum launching with smart contracts, I became definitely a bigger advocate of the industry, and that's what kind of led us to starting Coral and combining blockchain financing and all of that.
That's wonderful. What's the backstory behind Coral in terms of how did the team come together? When did the idea come together? And what are your current plans?
Yeah, so I mean, when I was working at IU Financial, I saw a lot of lending opportunities out there. So a lot of startups would apply, but they don't necessarily fit the traditional alternative lending space. I mean, the alternative lending space was kind of supposed to be an alternative for banks and raising money, but unfortunately, it wasn't the solution for startups and growing businesses. It was more like for retail, mom and pop shops, coffee shops, restaurants. So it solved kind of that problem. It did not solve the whole startup fundraising space. And at that point, we kind of started exploring what solutions are out there. And it happened that part of my work with IU, we worked with Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank, and he was big on royalties and venture debt, right? Mr. Wonderful. So I started looking more into that model, and I kind of like that royalty model more, where we've seen equity crowdfunding come to life, but it wasn't really the best solution yet for everyone. It wasn't picking up in the States and North America in general, as it was picking up in the UK, for example. And looking at the royalty model was very interesting. You're kind of giving capital to businesses that is non-dilutive, aligns the interest of businesses and investors. And it's flexible during economic uncertainty for a business that's growing slowly. And a lot of times those startups just need that small injection of capital to stimulate growth, right? Not every business needs $20 million to launch, right? Especially companies that are transactional or bootstrap, and 30K would be sufficient to kind of grow their or like increase their growth by 30% or 40%, right? And that's like kind of why we started thinking about a royalty concept and going the royalty approach. At that point, I was on my own, and I started looking for a team to kind of complement that. I had the product strategy, taking a product design, marketing, taking it to market and launching it. But it's still like credit analysis and investment analysis wasn't my forte. I wasn't the hardcore numbers guy. And as much as I understand it, it's not my specialty after all. So that's when I got introduced to Derek, my co-founder, through one of our advisors. And Derek and I met in Toronto almost a year ago. And we kind of hit it off. We talked a bit about what I'm doing, and he was looking to get into the startup scene again. And we shared the same vision and goal for what we're trying to solve in the industry. And since then, Derek has been on my speed dial.
I like that. I like the way you put it. Oh, that's fantastic. So let's deconstruct Coral very quickly. So who would be interested in using Coral?
Cool. So Coral is basically a best fit for any growing startup or small business that has a recurring revenue stream, right? Or what we call subscription model or consistent sources of revenue. So a quick example of that would be a SaaS company or software as a service, right? So you have monthly subscriptions or yearly subscriptions. You know what kind of revenue you're getting on a monthly basis, so it's easy to predict your payments and how your growth is. Unlike a restaurant or coffee shop that is transactional or could be seasonal, so that's not our typical business. So we focus on any business that has a subscription recurring revenue model, whether it's fintech, blockchain, AI, or just a pure technology company. Anything with an online presence has that model is a good fit for us. We usually look at businesses that are doing and a minimum of $10,000 in MRR or monthly recurring revenue with healthy gross margins of 30% and above, right? Because the way a royalty payment works, we take a percentage of your top line revenue until you pay us back. And that percentage is anywhere between 2 to 10%, right? So if you have anything less than gross margin of 30%, we can really hinder your growth and impact your cash flow. And that's not something we want, right? I mean, the whole purpose of our royalty investments or revenue sharing investment is to stimulate growth, whether that growth is product expansion, team expansion, market expansion. And that's the kind of the forte and our minimum criteria for an investment. And obviously you need to be like 6 months in business, but not just 6 months as in launch. You need to be 6 months with a consistent source of revenue for the past 6 months. So like this is perfect for startups that have achieved product market fit, have initial customers. They kind of starting to align their customer acquisition costs. They're starting to stabilize their churn rate. That's the kind of businesses we're going after. And that market alone is what North America is a 3.6 billion gap on its own. And that's growing, like businesses that actually need that kind of capital.
So Carl, this is Chuck Kakani. I just want to jump in and ask you one quick related thing. So do you fund more strategic functions like market expansion, like team expansion, or are you open to funding cash flow situations, like sometimes there's a payroll to be met for a small business owner. And usually $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 shortfall I've seen in companies is because of that. There's an immediate need for payroll. Would you do such things, or you're only focused on like some
sort? Yeah, so that's what I call working capital versus growth capital, right? Mm-hmm. We don't fund you to keep your lights on. Right. So if you're really short of money and you need us to kind of pay your bills, that's not us. You're not, there's a lot of shark lenders out there that you can reach out to, right? And that's not the business that you want to deal with. We deal more with businesses that are actually growing on their own. And if they don't get the capital, they can sustain paying their costs, right? Because they're generating revenue, but they're not able to grow beyond that unless they get additional capital. And that's the business we look at. So anything where we know that if I put 50K in you today and your gross margin is 30%, that gross margin is going to go to 50%. And then if I put another 100K in you, that gross margin is going to go to 60%. And so something that stimulates growth and then just to keep the lights on, and then just to keep the lights on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We shy away from those kind of businesses.
Got it. That's smart. You know, that's pretty astute. Yeah. And also, how do you differentiate yourself from the competition? Like, you know, what is the main advantage for an entrepreneur to come to you versus go and seek other traditional modes of financing out there?
Sure. So if you look, I mean, the traditional financing available for those businesses, it's the VC, angel money, right? Or banks, right? The traditional options. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with banks because that's the easiest thing to take a shot at. I mean, at that stage of business, you're not going to even qualify, right? Period. So unless you're cash flow positive, you've been a few years in business, banks are going to shy away from that kind of risk. On the other hand, venture capital, I mean, it's still a good option for a lot of businesses, right? Startups that are acquiring a lot of cash but don't generate enough revenue to kind of cover for that cash, venture capital is the best thing for them. Equity investment is the best because like companies like Uber, Facebook, Airbnb, like those companies burn a lot of cash more than they actually generate cash, right? So at that point, equity investments are good for them. But companies that are more transactional based that have been bootstrapped or can be bootstrapped, royalty investments are the best for them. And that's where it fit in. The advantage, even if for that type of businesses, the advantage is that going to equity versus royalty or like, which is Coral versus VCs, is one, you're not giving up control, right? You stay in control of your own company.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of VCs kind of deploy that capital and want you to exit and want you to grow that like significant growth rate that can actually hurt the business at home. They push for that because they want that exit. They want that 20x return on investment, that home run, right? Or the Hail Mary. And that's for something that you avoid if you go with Coral or a royalty investment in general, right? So you maintain control of your board seat, your business in general, and you grow at the rate you want to grow at your own speed and pace, right? No one is pushing you to take risks in your business that you don't have to take just because you want to get a 20x return for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Average amount that you're lending out. I don't know. Do you call these loans? What do you call them?
I call it a royalty investment. We try not to use the term loan because we're not the traditional lender in the same, like whether it's Lending Club, Prosper, or those kind of guys. But just to add to your point, like why we're also different is, I mean, a fundraising process that takes 6 to 9 months, 6 to 9 months, we nailed that down up to 2 weeks. And that number is going to even go lower and lower as our machine learning and AI gets more stable. So that's one aspect. You were asking what's typical investment. We do usually up to 4 times their monthly recurring revenue. So if we're saying that the minimum we accept is 10K, so the minimum check we'll write is 40 to 50K, and we write up to 1 million, right? So that means we're looking at businesses that are doing anywhere between 10K to 250K in monthly recurring revenue. So we write 50K to 1 million. That's initially. As our product and company expand, we might be writing bigger checks, but for now, that's where we're at.
So it makes a lot of sense. And when do they start repaying you? And how long do they repay you? Generally speaking, I'm getting ballparks.
Yeah, exactly. So the way our product works, we have a repayment cap of 1.5 to 2.5x, meaning a repayment cap means basically if we deploy 100,000 in a business, they're paying it anywhere between 150 to 250,000. And we aim for a maturity date between 2 to 5 years, on an average 3 years. And the way they pay us back is by taking a percentage of their top line revenue. So like we said, as if one of their operational, or one of their operational costs. So it's anywhere between 2 to 10%. So meaning, let's say we put 100,000 in you, and the royalty agreement would say you're going to pay it back as 150,000. And the way you're paying us back is by taking 5% of your top line revenue until that cap is reached. Once that cap is reached, you're done. Now, obviously, because it's a growth number, it's a growth capital, your gross margins are going to increase as we deploy that capital in you, right? And that means your payments are going to, your monthly recurring revenue is going to grow. And that means our payments are going to grow. So you might actually end up paying the investment faster than actually expected by us, right? But we do our analysis and we deploy the capital assuming that your margins or your growth is going to grow at a certain steady rate. But if you actually exceed that rate, you're going to pay it off faster.
So Sam, do you fix this percentage as a friend, the 1.5x, 2.5x, that number, and 2 to 10% somewhere in between? You gave an example of 5%, right, of top line.
Yeah.
Percentages, are they fixed up front?
So these are exactly predetermined in the agreement. So we know, okay, we approve them for this amount and we give them options. For example, if you want to pay it over 2 years, we'll have to take 5% of your revenue. If you take 3 years, you'll have to take, for example, 4%. We give them options. So obviously, repayment caps will adjust accordingly because the longer it is, the higher the risk we're carrying. But yeah, everything is predetermined. And if they sign a specific term sheet, we define what is the repayment cap and what is the percentage we take from the top line revenue. So that's defined from the get-go.
And so you are not looking at any other metrics like credit and things like that. You are just...
We look at almost 10,000 data elements before we actually make an approval. But the initial criteria for us to kind of go through the portal and make it on our list so that our model looks at it is we qualify you based on your monthly recurring revenue and your gross margin. But I mean, we connect to bank account systems, accounting systems, payment gateways, social media presence of the founders and the company. So we look, this is what I meant by 10,000 data elements. All of that is basically crunched into the machine learning models to kind of analyze your solvency, predictability, your risk of default, your gross margins, your growth rate, your number of customers that, for example, leave you, or like your churn rate, cost of acquisition of those customers. So we look at a hybrid of how a venture capital would look at a business, like the lifetime value of a customer, cost of acquisitions, your growth projections, all of that, and gets crunched to kind of give a score. And based on that score, we'll have a pricing for that investment.
I see. At the end of it, you also have an option to take equity in the company, isn't it?
Yeah, we have something called a warrant. It's a warrant. So we have the right to buy up to 2% as a warrant. And then if the price is known, we put it as a price. For example, if they've done a round before, so that will be at the last price. If not, it will be at the market price when they go live. The reason why we have that warrant, and first of all, that warrant is only exercisable within 2 to 5 years within maturity. So let's say we give them a 100K loan and or 200K loan and they pay it back, or investment. I forget sometimes when I use loan, but
and why is investment RSA?
Yeah, exactly, RSA when you're showing agreements. So if we do deploy that capital and then they have a home run, right? We want to have that upside participation, right? If I'm gonna be injecting capital in a business that's gonna grow significantly and gets acquired or IPO one day, we want to have that upside participation as well. I mean, one good example of that is Facebook. Facebook had an initial equity investment and a venture debt deal with a warrant. And when Facebook went public, the company or the fund that deployed that venture debt, it was the warrant that carried the portfolio for them, not the venture debt repayment, right?
Right, obviously. Yeah, I don't know if you want to switch to the investor side and talk about that. So please welcome. Yeah.
I just had one question, which is when does the repayment start?
Like a month later. So the first month after closing. So let's say we look at the end of each month, we look at the cash flow you've done or the transactions you've done so far that generates revenue. And then that's where and on the day after we kind of debit the payment. But basically there's like 15 to 20 days grace period until you get the money, everything is done. And then the first month after we collect the payment.
And after the whole loan is paid off, you have couple of years to decide whether you want to invest.
We have 2 to 5 years to decide if we want to exercise the warrant. After that, and that's predetermined in the contract, the period. And after that, the warrant expires and we have no rights.
Okay. Over to you, Chuck.
Yes. So, Sam, thanks for that. We understand the buy side. You know. So on the other side, on the investor side, so what are the advantages of going through Coral, and how does blockchain play a part in this for the investor? If I'm an investor coming in, what I'm looking for is this a blockchain amenable project naturally?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we believe in a way at Coral, we have a philosophy, right? So we think that blockchain or tokenization of financial assets is happening, right? I mean, we wanted to do something new where we actually apply a real life problem to the crypto space and not just try to find this problem for a solution in the crypto space. And that's why like, we kind of decided to launch the Coral token. I mean, we have a manifesto internally that which highlights a vision of where we're going to take the company. And the first step of it starts by tokenizing our equity as a company. So Coral is planned to be the world's first regulatory or compliance securities token. And now people can argue you're the first, you're not. We can get into that at one point. We will be the first fully regulatory compliant securities token. And where token holders basically will receive dividends from our quarterly earnings and profits. So basically, you're indirectly investing in the growth of those companies and helping them grow through a revenue sharing agreement. So instead of doing a peer-to-peer revenue sharing agreement, you're doing it through us. You're investing in Coral, the fintech company that has right now a flagship as a royalty product, but with more products to be rolled out down the road. So you're participating to the overall revenue of the company and not just that investment. The reason could it have been done without a blockchain? Yeah, probably. I mean, the royalties is not completely something new, but we added a technology stack behind it and we wanted to merge the world of fiat and blockchain and the way we're taking things forward. Effectively, we're going public as a company in Canada and we're going to be the first public company that actually trades through a token. I mean, public companies usually trade on a NASDAQ, a TSX, or something like that. But we're going to be officially the first company that trades through a token on a securities token exchange like T0 or the CSE once it goes live at the end of 2018. I mean, down the road, we'll definitely implement blockchain within our smart contracts, like as a royalty smart contract, manage that whole process. But for now, we're focused. The first step for us is to focus on the token launch of Coral.
I see. And how does, are you focused on the US market? And if so, we have the SEC, Reg A, Reg D, Reg A+, kind of exceptions Now, where do you fit into that? Is that your focus?
The token sale or the business side?
Token sale.
So right now, because you're focused in Canada, we're trying to achieve regulatory compliance in Canada first, right? So we're working with the Canadian regulators to go public and become a reporting issuer. So unlike a lot of those token sales or the ones that got regulatory approval, whether it's the US or Canada, they did it as a private company or what we call an offering memorandum, and they got kind of an exemption or like an exemption relief, which is basically not a full approval. They're more of a, like, here's 2 years until we figure it out. So we're seeking that. We're going to be fully regulatory compliant in Canada first and becoming a public company in Canada, which will make it easier to talk to other jurisdictions because now you're a public company. So the same way a Canadian company goes public and you want U.S. investors to be able to buy that stock, we'll be doing the same thing. And our lawyers are going to start collaborating with the SEC soon to put a Reg A wrapper or whatever's needed to attract U.S. investors.
Got it. But what do you count?
Yeah, because
I mean, the focus is worldwide, though, and we'll make sure that we're compliant with each jurisdiction before we start offering our token there.
Got it.
So now let's shift our attention to the investors and look at the motivations. So let's pretend I'm an investor and I want to invest into Coral tokens. Why should I do it? And B, how do I do it?
Okay, so why? One is you're kind of contributing to the growth of emerging businesses and startups around the world indirectly by investing through us, right? You're kind of getting that short-term and long-term return through buying a Coral token. The short-term return is that you're getting dividends in Ether from our earnings. And the long-term return is that depending on the performance of the company and how we're going to grow and expand our portfolio, you're getting that growth in the token price that you can basically sell down the road in a securities exchange. Helping that startup ecosystem as well grow. You have a liquid investment. So yeah, sure, you can participate in a venture capital fund, like whether it's an equity crowdfunding or something else. Then you'll have to wait for those companies to exit until you can get your equity. Now, a lot of startup funds are starting to tokenize their funds, and yeah, you're liquid. You can sell your token back and forth. But really, the only way you're going to make your money is just by selling your token based on supply and demand, unless one of those companies in the portfolio exit and then they pay the LP fees to the token holders. And that's what, like, a company takes 5 to 6 years to exit, and by that time there's a new technology already in the market. So the fact that we have that short-term return and long-term aspect of things is definitely beneficial for it. How? We have a token sale that's happening in summer 2018 once regulatory approval is granted. Right now, there's nothing happening. We do private placement just the way every business raises money right now. But the token sale will be happening in each jurisdiction once approval is granted within that jurisdiction. We're fully compliant and plan to be at the issuance and redistribution and resale. So like everyone needs to do a KYC. Everyone needs to do an AML check or so KYC, you know, your customer, anti-money laundry checks. All of those verifications will have to be done before purchasing the token once it goes live post approval from the regulators. Unlike a lot of those tokens that claim to be regulatory compliant, the regulatory compliance was, I'm not saying they were regulatory compliant, but they were only regulatory compliant at the issuance side. So before they issued the initial tokens, they had to do KYC. But afterwards, I can now buy that regulatory compliant token on a secondary market or a decentralized exchange without doing any KYC. And I own some of them, right? I mean, that's why, like, what we've done, we designed our token and a smart contract to be compliant 360. So even if you want to go buy it on a decentralized exchange down the road, both seller and buyer need to be KYC'd and verified through our portal first.
And that's the reason why your secondary market is going to be a security tokens exchange.
Exactly.
Got it. So let's imagine I invested $100,000 into tokens. Mm-hmm. Do you have an expected return? Can I expect 10% return, 5% return per year on the dividend payment?
I mean, if you just look at an investment from a revenue sharing agreement investment, not the token, I mean, as a company, each investment that we make in a revenue sharing agreement, it has a 15 to 30% IRR, right, based on our repayment cap. Now, what gets translated to the business, to the investors, not necessarily 15 to 30%. I mean, at the end of the day, it's really based on our quarterly profits. You get up to a certain percentage in dividends. I think we planned at 10%. But again, we haven't set the number because that's managed by the board of directors, like how much dividends to be distributed. But I mean, you're getting a percentage of the earnings. So you know exactly how we price our investments and we're clear about it. We'll be sharing our financials on quarterly basis as well. And then investors will get certain percentage of dividends of that. Ideally, we'd like to issue 10% up to in dividends and then reinvest the rest of our earnings back in the company portfolio. But that's the kind of expectancy rate to get, knowing that our average IRR is 15 to 30%, right?
So you're going to take, let's say, 15 to 30%. I'm going to just take 20% just to make the math easy. So 90% of that, which is about 18%, is going to be reinvested back in the company, and 2% will be returned annually to the investor.
I mean, yeah, assuming, for example, if our board decides that we're going to do a 10% dividends, and I need to be careful with what I say, because like I can't say we're going to promise returns because it's not guaranteed. And like for disclosure, we're not promising any dividends, we're not promising any returns. We don't want to be compared to BitConnect. Depending on the performance of the portfolio, the board of directors might decide, for an example, that, yeah, we'll do 10% dividend issuance this quarter and reinvest the rest in the portfolio, right? And if based on your example, then yes, that will be the number. That will be the
increase. Okay. So what we can expect is liquidity, because I can trade my tokens, and some amount of dividend payback. Yeah. On my token in the form of Ethereum.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what makes it interesting, right? You now have the long-term, short-term play.
And I'm going to get a payment. Is it quarterly? Ethereum payment?
So we do quarterly remittance of our dividends through Ethereum.
Okay. So that's very exciting. Now, the other question is de-risking. How much of this model has been, are you already operational? Have you tested this out? Is it working?
Yes. So Cora will be launching and doing investments like around summertime as well, which kind of parallel with our token sale once the regulatory approval is granted. But before that, we're going to be doing up to 3 investments in companies that we have kind of pre-identified and working on identifying the rest. So like we haven't funded or closed any investment yet, but our model with the triaging models internally and working on doing the credit analysis and running those models and scoring models internally to kind of test them. And then part of our work with those 3 companies would be to kind of test the viability of those models and how well they're working. But we have a pipeline of almost 2,500 businesses that are signed up for our early access list. And the idea is basically we're going to be launching our beta application for the business side by the end of this month, which will allow businesses to start connecting. And even though they might not qualify, good data is always good for us because that allows us to kind of test the model and make sure it's working or not without necessarily funding them down the road. But I mean, we're going to open the beta for businesses to start applying, allow that data to start coming in. Because a lot of that model work has been within a confined box, right? Testing it and making sure, feeding it statistical data and historical data. And now it's time to open it up to the public to kind of test it before we start actual funding.
And have you tested your model algorithmically on historical data of some sort?
Yeah, so Derek has been in charge of that, and with his team, the machine learning team. I mean, they've been running it against startup historical data, small business historical data, and running it through. There's still some work to be done on that.
And what is the default rate?
So we've been sitting there planning a default rate. Like we've kind of went with a conservative approach of 5 to 10% default rate per vintage.
Is that the industry standard?
Yeah, the industry standard is anywhere between like 5 to 10, and we can put like 10 as a worst case scenario.
Although my suspicion is in reality you'll be way lesser because
we would be less. We kind of planned as a 5 to 10% as a like worst case. It's like kind of do our financial projections. But we aim for like there will be probably defaults at one point. But I mean our goal is 0 default, but our threshold is going to be really low.
Okay.
Because we kind of monitor businesses early on, right? I mean, we have a proactive monitoring of things. So we don't just wait for things to happen. We refresh the data every few weeks, like whether it's their bank data, accounting data, to see how they're doing. If there's any solvency issues that could be triggering any bad remarks. So say suddenly you take a credit line. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's going to flag in our system. Why did they take a credit line? Do they need more money? If there's something, a sudden drop in their customers, okay, that's a flag for us, right? So
okay.
So,
go ahead.
So Sam, just as a bigger picture thing, so how much are you planning to raise? What's your objective? What's the soft cap, hard cap, and how much of it is operational money for Coral, and how much is going to be deployed as royalty investments, capital for royalty investments?
So we're raising a total of $49.5 million.
I'm sorry?
$49.5 million US.
Okay.
So that's the total we're raising in token sale live and pre-sale down the road. And we're using 90% of that as portfolio capital to deploy in revenue sharing agreements, and the remaining 10% will be just internally for operational and scaling and growing the company. I mean, we plan to deploy that capital over 2 years almost, with an average deal of 300,000.
Got it.
And from the returns that you get, 90% will go back in, 10% again, that will be variable.
Exactly.
That's something that you'll decide.
Yeah.
So essentially, the capital will kind of keep coming back and...
Exactly.
Kant, you want to go ahead or you want?
Yeah, you were asking a question. Go ahead, please.
So, Sam, you said the average deployment, capital deployment will be $300,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so you have $14.5 million USD, 10% of it is to your, towards your internal operational expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that leaves about roughly about four, you know, that's like 4.9. So you have about $45 million to deploy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, we're using like almost $5 million for operational capital, and the remaining is going towards like $44 million of that is almost going to operational deployment capital.
I see.
Yeah.
And so that's a pretty good amount of capital to sit on. So you are pretty confident that you will source the deals through your process, your algorithm, your machine learning stuff. You'll be ready by the time the token service.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're working on getting everything ready. I mean, obviously, you're not going to sell it. Your numbers are, and our funding numbers are going to grow slowly month after month. But yeah, we plan to deploy all of that over 2 years. And we're planning on having strategic partnerships and with whether it's accelerators, incubators, VC funds that could refer a deal for us, shared office spaces that have a lot of startups, software development warehouses, and even companies like FreshBooks, QuickBooks, Salesforce. I mean, there's nothing final with those, but like discussions are happening, and then it's beneficial for them to refer deals for us because companies that are developing on their portals would benefit from growing their margins, and that's how they make their money anyway in the first
place. I see. So, Sam, do you see this because the whole financial the funding cycle, okay, the pipeline. Let's assume it's going to be disrupted with blockchain and cryptos and all this stuff. Where do you see your company coming into a disruptive play? At which point in the funding pipeline do you see this happening? Are you going to disrupt angel, seed, VC, everything? What is your vision? Where do you see this going?
I mean, we think we're disrupting more the fundraising spectrum for like growth startups or early startups that are in the growth stage. I mean, that we think that's not necessarily we're saying VC is bad, is a bad option, right? We're just giving an alternative for startups to grow through a different model. I mean, we're handling the 99% of businesses that VCs reject. And now everyone would say, okay, well, if VCs are rejecting 99% of deals, that means they're crap. Not necessarily. Just VCs look for a certain home run and a certain return on investment when they invest in a business, right? And sometimes a business is good and healthy and growing, but it's not going to carry the 20x return. It's not going to exit or go on IPO, right? And that's why they get left behind. And these are the businesses we kind of are attracting, basically.
So just to clarify, you're carving a space in between VC, outside private equity, because the money you're talking about deploying is too small for a private equity or a VC.
It's not that it's too small. It's just the business itself is not. I mean, most of those guys do equity investments, right? And when they do an equity investment, they're hoping that their company is going to exit one day or get acquired, and they make their 10x, 20x fold return. And so, and that's why the smaller guys get left out.
Right.
And these are the guys we focus on. I mean, there's a lot of companies that started just bootstrapped and they made it, right?
Like, correct. And by the way, just to clarify, when I say too small, it's not negatively, because some entrepreneurs don't need that kind of cash.
Yeah.
Right? You're better off without taking too much cash, more than what you need, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So obviously we're not going to be, if a business does not qualify for a VC because they're horrible and it's a bad business model and there's no growth, we're not going to go ahead and fund them.
Right.
This is one thing that we have to all worry about, our marketing. This is not an invitation to every bad startup and bad entrepreneur to come to us. We're not giving free money for the sake of giving free money. If you don't show the numbers, if you don't show future, the same way a venture capital said no, or the same way an angel investor said no, guess what? We will say no. We're saying yes to the business that VCs say, yes, you're a good model, but you're not a good fit for us. That could be a potential business.
Right.
Okay. I think I had two last questions. You know, one is the 2% warrant that you have. What happens to that when you buy into that? That means that is equity, right? That's not.
So it's a right to purchase equity, right? So let's say it's a right for us, reserves 2% for us at a certain strike price. And let's say the company exits or goes public, right? So at that point, within that time frame, at that point, we get to exercise that, hey, this 2% is ours, and then we get to sell it once it's public, right? So now that there's a value, and that actual value is going to go up in price, that's when we get to exercise this. And the profits of that will be distributed also to token holders as dividends.
Okay, you answered my second question. That's what my second question is. How
it's part of our revenue, right? So if a warrant is exercised and we make money out of it, obviously that contributes to revenue within the quarter it was exercised and we made money out of it. And obviously token holders will benefit from that approach. And that goes back to what I told you, short-term and long-term returns. You're not just investing in the revenue sharing agreement. There's a high chance a lot of our businesses might get acquired or public, or a warrant will be exercised. And that's actually part of the analysis we've done in our financial models, that some of the warrants will be exercised and it will carry significant profits for the company and the portfolio, which will be shared and remitted through dividends as well.
And can US investors invest in your potential sale coming up?
If approval is granted, we plan to have US investors on board. But until the SEC does, we kind of have to shy away from that. So we're trying to be compliant as much as we can. Any country that requires regulatory approval for us to launch our token sale, we'll make sure that the regulatory approval is met before.
All right. I think we are almost coming down on the wire here. Chuck, do you have a last question?
Yeah, I do. And where are your source companies, your target companies for capital deployment? Are they Canadian right now, American?
The focus right now is North America in general, mainly Canada, US, and with plans to expand by 2019 to OECD countries like Europe, European countries, or like financially stable countries.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
It's not because we need integrations with every country. So, I mean, because we give data dependent, we have to connect to bank providers, accounting systems. I need to make sure that those service providers are available in the countries or the region.
I see.
Wonderful. Sam, this has been fantastic. But I wanted to, before we finally wrap up, do you have any other points you want to share with our listeners? Maybe questions that Chuck and I missed asking you, or some important point you wanted to share?
I'm just trying to think so that I stay regulatory compliant with whatever I'm saying as well. I mean, look, if you're a business that's interested in revenue sharing agreement or looking to raise money through our revenue sharing product, or just want to know more about our product, definitely go to our website, coral.io, CORL.io, and reach out to us. You can sign up for our early access list, and you'll get updates from us, and we can definitely look into you once once we launch. You can even shoot us an email at hello@coral.io. If you're an investor interested in our token sale, you just have to wait till we get regulatory approval in your country and just monitor what's going on.
Thank you, Sam, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
And hey, investors, we really need you to head over to iTunes and Google Play and give us a 5-star rating if you like this podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.